but he thought it must be pretty high. So he was walking around, and he saw all these sages meditating. He would try to speak to some of them, but they wouldn't reply because they were in samadhi. So he was feeling a little frustrated. Plus, he couldn't see the Lord. So he was feeling more frustrated. But he kept chanting his mantra, and he became even more absorbed in his mantra. And finally, the sage Pipalayana, he appears in the 11th canto. Isn't it? He's one of the 9 Yogendras. Yes, in the 11th canto, Pipalayana Muni is there. So he spoke to Gopikumar and invited him, come and join us, learn meditation. And then he explained that we see the Lord always. All of us, we all see the Lord, and we all see him always. Now, bear in mind that in Indraloka, it was mainly Indra who was seeing the Lord. Others would see him when they were with Indra, other demigods. But when they had to go and do their duties, they wouldn't see the Lord. So it was basically, it was mainly Indra who was seeing the Lord. But even then, sometimes the Lord would go away. Then in Mahaloka, the householders, the householder Brahman devotees, they would all see the Lord, but only when they were doing sacrifice. Not in the evening, not in the morning before they started the sacrifice, only when they were doing the sacrifice. Pipalayana told him, here, we all see the Lord always. So Gopikumar was looking around and thinking, really? Where? What is the idea? What's the secret? So then Pipalayana told him the secret. You have to learn meditation. Yes, so then he explained why. Why we focus on meditation. We are not so concerned about seeing the Lord with these eyes. That is not so good. We would rather see him with our minds or hearts. Mind and heart here is, these terms are synonymous. So he explains why. And try and catch this, because, you know, not that we would really agree entirely, but there's some very interesting points here, and I think it's going to come up in the next test. First of all, he said, the Lord reveals himself, meaning, reveals himself means in such a way that the devotee can appreciate that he is the Lord. Only when the mind is thoroughly purified, or the heart is thoroughly purified. And then you see the Lord with your heart, with the eyes of the heart, or with the mind's eye, not with these eyes, not with these eyes, but the internal eye. He said that these senses, all of the senses, including the eye, the sense of sight, and all the other external senses, they're all under the control of the mind. They are just like subordinate functions of the mind, really. Yes, they're under the control of the mind. And if the mind is not functioning, even if the senses are there, but they are useless. And the self will not perceive anything through them. And these are important points. Then he said, even if the Lord reveals himself to the eye of the devotee, he is seen by the power of the mind, or in terms of the condition of the heart. When the mind is, well, yeah, okay. He says, seeing the Lord in person is no guarantee of becoming blissful or, you know, having like real realization. As we see in the cases of people like Kamsa and Duryodhana. Well, that's a good point. They saw the Lord with these eyes and they didn't become blissful. There was a lack of realization in their minds, in their hearts. So even though they saw him with these eyes, there was no, you know, like real experience, proper experience. And even some people like Madhu and Kaitaba and so many demons actually, they also saw the Lord with their eyes. But not only did they not become blissful, but they didn't lose their evil natures. So therefore, to see the Lord with the eyes is not really the point. And Pipalayana said, that the Lord, in his pastimes, he allows things like this to happen. Like Kamsa and Duryodhana seeing the Lord with their eyes, but not becoming blissful. Rather, they became anxious and fearful. And people, demons like Madhu and Kaitaba, they saw the Lord, but they didn't lose their evil dispositions. Pipalayana says that the Lord allows things like this to happen just to demonstrate the glory of this meditation process and perceiving the Lord in that way, through meditation with the mind, within the mind, within the heart. Yes. How does that sound? Anyway, you can see he is a meditation fan. So he's a bit too much on that side. Although there's some nice points here at the same time. But we would not accept that this is like the ultimate understanding. Although, you know, there's something in it. And Pipalayana, he is certainly a very important transcendental person. So he said, when the mind is pacified, then it can fix on the Lord, and then you can become happy. And when you experience that happiness, none of your external senses can experience it. In other words, it is strictly internal. It is not just a sensory experience. It is something beyond the senses. It is mental, or it is within the heart. It is an internal experience. So then he concludes by saying that of the 9 devotional processes, remembrance is the most important. Well, it's very important, but actually we accept hearing as being more important. Anyway, he is a meditation fan. He is particularly inspired by remembering the Lord. So this is his taste, really. Yes, of the 9 devotional processes, remembrance, smaranam, is the main one, And one can only render devotional service when the mind is fixed like this. So, in this way, Pipalayana Rishi preaches to Gopakumar. So Gopakumar, he became attracted. He took up the meditation. Along with chanting his mantra, and sure enough, he saw the Lord in his meditation. But he found that when he would go deep into his meditation, he would forget about his chanting. So sometimes he would come out of his chanting, out of his meditation after a long time, and he would feel anxious that, oh, I haven't finished my chanting. So then he would express, he would say things like, oh, what a problem, what a disturbance. So Pipalayana and the four Kamas would ask him, what is wrong? And then they'd preach to him and get him to go back into meditation again. But like this, he found he wasn't entirely happy. And he found that he was remembering Vrindavan sometimes. One day, a strange but very imposing looking person with four heads came. And everyone, the four Kumars, who are like the senior people there in Tapaloka, the four Kumars, Pipalayana, and all the other big sages, they all offered their obeisances to this very impressive looking four-headed person. And Gopakumar asked the Kumars, who is this? They said, it's our father, Lord Brahma, from Satyaloka. It is even higher than this place. And there, the Lord of the universe is living in a thousand-headed form. What is the name of that form? The Mahapurusha. So we are meeting some of the same persons. Yes, so Gopakumar, he immediately started chanting his mantra, and sure enough, he went there very quickly. And there he saw the Supreme Lord reclining on Ananta. Lakshmi was massaging his feet, and Lord Brahma was there. And the Lord was very compassionately, very benevolently instructing Brahma in devotional service. And Lord Brahma was leaning forward and hearing the instructions, then stepping back and repeating the instructions, and then agreeing with the instructions. It was a very nice scene. Gopakumar fainted. Overwhelmed that at last this must be that supreme place. But Lakshmi picked him up and brought him to the side of the Lord. So he told his mind, he preached to his mind, give up this hankering for Vrindavan and Jagannath Puri. Just give it up and just stay here. So he stayed there for some time, watching Lord Brahma, worshipping the Lord, and the Lord was acting as a father to Lord Brahma. But sometimes the Lord left. Anyway, in the meantime, somehow Gopakumar, seeing the intimate connection between Lord Brahma and the Lord Mahapurusha, he developed the desire to have the same relationship. He desired to become Lord Brahma. So one day, just after one of the minor devastations. When these devastations happen, well, it is a bit of a mess. So there was a large residue of foam left over from all the tossing and all the commotion of the previous devastation. Some large amount of foam was there. Somehow, Lord Brahma touched it, thinking that, well, just not thinking anything, really. And so he touched it. Soon as he touched it, that foam transformed into a terrible demon, massive demon, extremely powerful. Why? Because he embodied the terrible, destructive power of the ocean of devastation, the Pralaya ocean, which is an important component in the devastations in the universe. So he embodied that power, the power to destroy, and Lord Brahma became scared. And he ran and escaped. So the Lord, the Mahapurusha, easily killed the demon, but Lord Brahma was too scared and wouldn't come back. So then the Mahapurusha appointed Gopakumar. You become Lord Brahma. So Gopakumar then arranged everything in the entire universe in a wonderful Vaishnav way. He sent devotees throughout the entire creation to preach devotional service. He made all the demigods, well, he appointed pure devotees to become all the demigods. In fact, it was so nice that devotees were coming from other universes, and he was sending them out on different missions in the universe for Krishna consciousness. And it was just, the whole universe was an overwhelming festival of devotional service. It was just wonderful. Despite everything, Gopakumar remained his simple cowherd boy self. Yes. He maintained that lifestyle. And what did he do? He kept chanting his mantra. He's really into his mantra by now. He is extremely into it because he's had so much experience from it. And as a result, his realization and his faith, oh, has become extremely, powerfully strong. However, there were some problems. As Lord Brahma, he had a lot to do. So many things to do. He started drowning in the ocean of duties of a Lord Brahma. One day he heard that he was going to die after some time. And he got quite taken aback by this. And he started becoming a little fearful sometimes. And then he would chant his mantra and he would remember Vrindavan and he would become disturbed in that way. But then when he served his father, the Lord, and when Goddess Lakshmi treated him very affectionately and consoled him like a mother, then he felt happy for some time. So in this way, he had a mixed experience, or he was having a mixed experience in Satyaloka, Brahmaloka. So one day, as Lord Brahma, in Brahmaloka, Satyaloka, Gopakumar was sitting there, and as was, you know, quite ordinary, all sorts of people were coming and going, visiting him, so many demigods and sages and saintly persons and mystics and all sorts. One day, a group of sages were there, and he just overheard them talking about someone from Earth who had attained impersonal liberation, and how wonderful that was, and how blissful it was, and how it was even higher than any pleasure in the material world, even the pleasures on Brahmaloka. So, when Gopakumar heard this, he talked to them, he asked them questions, and they answered his questions very well. He found himself becoming attracted to impersonal liberation. However, some of his close associates, different of the Vedic scriptures, they also heard this going on, this discussion, so they came over to take part. First of all, the goddesses of the Upanishads and other of the Shruti scriptures. Shruti means different parts of the four Vedas. Like, if you're familiar with the composition, the structure of the Vedas, they're divided up into Samhitas, Brahmanas, Aranyakas, and Upanishads. Yeah. Actually, every Veda, there are four Vedas, and they're composed of Samhitas, but each Samhita has its Brahmana, Aranyaka, and Upanishad. They're grouped in groups of four like that, although the main element is the Samhita. So, all these different scriptures, the different subdivisions of the four Vedas, they started agreeing, saying, yes, this is very good. However, you can only attain liberation through cultivation of knowledge, jnana, which, of course, is something that Gopakumar is very weak in. There are also some of these Smriti Shastras who were agreeing. Smriti Shastras means they're the Dharma Shastras, Shastras like the Ayurveda and Dhanurveda. These are Dharma Shastras from the Smriti section, not actually within the four Vedas as such, as we know them. Some of the Puranas even some of the Pancharatras, these are Smriti, not Shruti. Of course, I don't know if we really want to go into the details of the differences between Shruti and Smriti, but basically Shruti means the four Vedas and their immediate corollaries. And Smriti means the Dharma Shastras, the Itihasas, the histories, Ramayana and Mahabharata, and the Puranas, and Pancharatras, the Tantras. These are Smriti Shastras. So some of them, who are more on the impersonal side, they were all agreeing, yes, yes, this is very good, but if you want it, they're addressing Gopakumar, if you want it, because they could see he was attracted, if you want it, you have to cultivate knowledge of Brahman. So then, some of the personified Puranas and Agamas, the Agamas, what are the Agamas? They are Vaishnav scriptures, Vaishnav tantras, Vaishnav, they're like instruction manuals on different devotional activities, like Narada Pancharatra. That is a Vaishnav Tantra. So it is an Agama scripture. And Narada Pancharatra is explaining the process of deity worship. So their instruction manuals, the Agamas, their instruction manuals, how to carry out different Vaishnav processes in very practical terms. So some of the Puranas and some of these Agamas, Vaishnav instructional type books, they said that actually this knowledge you're talking about is very hard to obtain, and this liberation is very hard to obtain, but it's easily achieved by devotional service. Now, bear in mind, I don't know if you noted at the beginning, but we said that in the end, this point is accepted, that liberation is easily achieved by devotional service, more easily than by simply cultivating knowledge. And even knowledge comes more easily if you render devotional service. This is the point which is going to come out at the end. Although, of course, we understand this is not the ultimate point in the Vedic scriptures. Anyway, so these scriptures made the point that if you try to cultivate this knowledge of Brahman independent of devotional service, it is almost impossible. It's practically impossible. But if you perform devotional service very correctly, then you can achieve liberation easily without taking any help from any other process. And for example, they quoted, here's a verse from Brihannaradiya Purana. Jivanti jantava sarve yata mataram asrita tata bhaktim samasritya sarva jivanti siddhaya. In the same way as all living beings live their bodies under the shelter of their mothers, so all perfections live under the complete shelter of devotional service. So, just try and understand what is being said here, or the way they are expressing themselves, in a very mild way. Actually, in an indirect way, they're saying that liberation exists under the shelter of devotional service. It's a mild statement. So, certain Shrutis and Smritis, certain parts of the Vedic scriptures and their corollaries, and certain of the Puranas and other Smriti Shastras, quietly agreed and nodded their heads. Their scriptures, which have statements like, this is from the Padma Purana, Apatyam dravinam dara hara karmyam haya gaja sukhani swarga moksho cha nadure hari bhaktita. Children, wealth, one's wife, precious necklaces, one's home, horses, elephants, and all kinds of happiness, plus the attainment of heaven and liberation, none of these are far away when devotional service to Lord Hari is present. So what is the point here? It's making it a little more clear. In other words, the idea is that certain scriptures, particularly the four Vedas, but even some of the Smriti Shastras, death impersonal, or at least impersonal, or at least they encourage an impersonal outlook. Then some parts of the Shruti, some parts of the four Vedas and their corollaries, some parts of the Smriti, in other words, some of the Puranas and so on, they just gently say that you can get liberation through devotional service. Some say it more strongly, and this is the case here. Some say it more strongly. So the scriptures which say it more strongly, they quietly agreed. They don't say it a lot more strongly, but a little more strongly. They quietly agreed. Then, some of the Maha Upanishads, some of the great Agamas, Vaishnav, Tantric instructional literatures, and others, and some other Puranas, which have their roots in the Shruti. Anyway, we don't want to get too technical, but it's very interesting. They became angry with the scriptures who quietly agreed. And they said, why don't you make this point more clearly? Make this point more clearly. That liberation is easily achieved by devotional service. You should say it. Don't just hint at it. You should say it and make it clear. With statements like this from the Vishnu Purana. Dharam arta kamai kim tasya muktis tasya karestita samasta jagatam mule yasya bhakti stira twai. If someone has firm devotion towards you, the root of all the worlds, then what is the value of religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification to him? Liberation sits in the palm of his hand. So we have four groups of scriptures here, four categories. Those who are kind of impersonal, those who are saying that those who are saying that the goal is liberation, those which are saying that liberation is more easily achieved by devotional service, those which are saying that liberation is much more easily achieved by devotional service, and those that are saying that liberation is just nothing. It's in the palm of the hand of someone who's rendering devotional service. So easy. Yes. Then some very great scriptures acknowledged the discussion. They were the most confidential and rarely obtainable Upanishads, like the Gopal Tapani Upanishad. And there are others. They are Vaishnav. When I say Vaishnav, they are like full on strong Vaishnav scriptures. But they are Upanishads. What does that mean? It means they're part of the Shruti, part of the four Vedas, or connected with the four Vedas. Then certain great Vaishnav Agamas, those Vaishnav instructional literatures, like Satvata Siddhanta, and a few of the Puranas, and the head of all these scriptures was Srimad Bhagavatam. They all sat there and smiled. That's what they did. They all sat there and smiled, but didn't say anything. Now you might think that, why not? Seems like an important discussion to take part in. But they didn't say anything, they just smiled. So Sanatana Goswami explains, some of them were thinking, just see the power of the Supreme Lord's illusory energy, by which even the essential message of Scripture, which should be obvious, becomes incomprehensible, even to vastly learned authorities, like the Scriptures. Because the thing is, you know, the real point which we're going to come to is that none of these Scriptures have got the point. The point has got nothing to do with liberation. Anyway, that's going to come out when the devotional Scriptures preach to Gopakumar on their own, away from this debate which is going on. So then others of these the greatest Scriptures were thinking in a scornful way, who are these Shastras daring to openly declare the confidential glory of bhakti that it bestows liberation? So they didn't appreciate it. So the second group considered the less advanced Scriptures unqualified to become involved in such a discussion, and they felt that this was the wrong format, that the whole thing that was going on was wrong, and therefore they didn't take part. So then, those agamas, you remember the agamas, who are really, you know, teaching how liberation is easily achieved through devotional service, and a few of their friends, they got really fired up, and there was a fierce debate between them and the more impersonal Scriptures. So the great Scriptures just left. They didn't even bother staying in that place. So when they left, all the other Scriptures sort of got a little taken aback. And then there was some attempt to resolve the matter, and it was felt, you know, that somehow the fact that the great Scriptures left had such an impact on the other Scriptures that they all agreed, all right, liberation, knowledge and liberation are easily achieved by devotional service, more so than by knowledge alone, as the agamas had originally said. The first agamas had originally said. So this pleased Gopakumar. In other words, Gopakumar is now feeling that if I want to get liberation, then I should do it through devotional service. As Lord Brahma, he is thinking in this way. However, then he remembered those great devotional Scriptures. He had noted their very deep, very grave smiles as they were listening to all these conjectures and different arguments being presented. And then he remembered how they left the debate in disgust. And he thought, they must have a higher idea. So he went to them and appealed to them, please come back. Please explain to me what is really the answer. So they came and they explained to Gopakumar. They said that sometimes, it's true, sometimes we have to mention impersonal liberation. Just to contrast it with devotional service. Just to glorify devotional service as being far better than it. Sometimes we have to describe it, or mention it at least, mention it. Sometimes we have to mention it to encourage people to completely avoid it. But actually, you should know that the pleasure of devotional service is many millions of millions of times greater than that of liberation. Yes. They explained there's no positive pleasure in liberation. It's just a relief from pain, or it's just something like sleeping. It's nothing. It's not a positive experience. It's like nothing in particular. It's not positive. It's not negative. It's just kind of nowhere. And they said that it's not really liberation, because afterwards you'll take birth again. After some time you'll fall down. And they quoted 10, 2, 32, is it? Or Yen Ye Ravandakshava Muktamaninas. 10, 2, 32, is it? Or Yen Ye Ravandakshava Muktamaninas. Twayastabhavad Abhashuda Buddhaya. Aruya Kritrena Parampadam Tata Patantyudo Najata Yushmadangraya. That those people who become liberated, but patantyuda, they fall down again, because they have no attachment for the lotus feet of the Lord. So they said this word liberation is a misnomer. It's not the right name. It is not liberation. It is just a temporary cessation of suffering. It is not actual liberation as such. And they said that in terms of the activities of devotional service, this liberation is available even through namabhas, a quite undeveloped stage of chanting the holy names, nowhere near the pure stage. So but they said there is some value in it. It helps us understand that we are Brahman. We're not these bodies. We are Satchit Ananda. We are spirit. It helps us in that respect. But it doesn't give the proper understanding of who we are. That we are, along with those things, we are actually the eternal servants of Krishna. And he is the supreme Brahman. So therefore, we are one with and different from him. We are one with him in quality, but different from him in quantity. So the great scriptures said that therefore our philosophy is achintya bhed abhed tattva. We are spirit. We are Satchit Ananda. We are Brahman, but the Lord is Parabrahman, the supreme Brahman, far greater than us in quantity. So they went on like this to explain how devotional service is far better than liberation. Liberation is nothing. It's hardly even a secondary consideration. They said even demons attain it. Cow killers and killers of Brahmins attain it sometimes. So how can it be so great if people like that attain it? Then they explained to Gopakumar that we have explained things to you in this way just to help people who are attached to liberation become attracted to devotional service. But actually there's far more that we could tell you. There's a lot more that we could tell you. But we just want you to understand this point. So Gopakumar agreed, yes, I will not worry about impersonal liberation. I'll just be a devotee. So they told him, you go, you chant your mantra, and go beyond this universe. If you want to see the Brahman in a personal form, go to Mahakalapur, beyond the universe, and see Lord Mahakala. He is the Brahman in a personal form. Yeah, so you can see. I mean, an interesting point here is that the prospect of Gopakumar becoming an impersonalist, you know, it was taken to be a big problem. So all these big scriptures came, and they really kind of worked him over. They really preached to him in a big way to get him out of being an impersonalist. And they succeeded. He came back to being, or he came to the point of being a personalist. They told him, you try and go there, but if you're not satisfied there, go back to Vrindavan. Now he's still on Brahmaloka, and he was sitting there wondering what to do. But then the Lord came to him and told him, just go back to Vrindavan. Just go back there. And then from there, perhaps you can approach this Mahakalapur if you want to. So therefore the second chapter concludes with, oh, and the Lord told him, you'll see your guru again there. So go back. So the chapter concludes with Gopakumar about to go back to Vrindavan. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Today we're moving on to chapter 3 of part 2 of Brihad Bhagavatamrita. We have 5 parts to go, 5 chapters to go. And we have 9 days, plus a 10th day where we'll have another test. So I thought that this week we would try to do chapters 3, 4, and 5. 3 chapters in 5 days rather than a chapter a day, which is what we've been doing so far. These chapters are a little long, really, I think. So today we'll begin chapter 3, and we'll do most of chapter 3. We've written on the board here some headings of some of the natural divisions or natural sections in this third chapter. Well, first of all, Gopakumar is in Vrindavan, but then he goes to Mahakalapur, which we have written up there on the board. Mahakalapur is the abode of impersonal liberation. And there is a particular form of the Lord presiding there, who is, in fact we heard the other day, he is the impersonal Brahman, but in a personal form. Yes, so
He's not so totally personal as Krishna himself in his two-handed form, or even Lord Narayan. Although he is a person, but the impersonal aspect is prominent in him. And we'll see how that comes out as we go through. Then, so Gopikumar goes there. From, of course, the material world, he goes through the coverings. We'll discuss how he goes through the coverings. He reaches Mahakalapur, meets Lord Mahakala. That is very interesting experience. And then he meets Lord Shiva. He's contemplating going back to Vrindavan, but while he's still there in Mahakalapur, he meets Lord Shiva, who is traveling on his way from Shivaloka to Mount Kailash. And they have some discussions. And then, as they're still there, actually, in Mahakalapur, this is all going on in Mahakalapur, but some inhabitants of Vrindavan pass through the Brahmajyoti, Mahakalapur, the impersonal aspect, or the impersonal region, you could say, just outside the coverings of the universe. So Lord Shiva explains a little bit about them, and then Gopikumar meets them, and they start preaching to him. There are two phases, really, to their preaching. One is, they recommend that he perform Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. And, in fact, particularly they actually recommend that he perform Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, but with an emphasis on chanting. Actually, I should have put that there on the board. Yes, it's not just Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, but it is Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti with an emphasis on chanting. Anyway, the first part actually is about Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. And then the second part, they explain very clearly that chanting is the best process, the best of the nine processes. And amongst the different types of chanting, because you can chant about the pastimes of the Lord, the philosophy of the Lord, or the holy names of the Lord, or like this, there are different subject matters for chanting, but particularly the inhabitants of Vaikuntha explain that of all the different types of chanting or subject matters for chanting, the best is the holy names. And in fact, that takes us to the end of the third chapter, but today I'm proposing that we will get somewhere into the middle of the discussion between Gopikumar and the inhabitants of Vaikuntha. Let us see how it goes. But I'm not really intending finishing the whole chapter today. So, Gopikumar, last week we left Gopikumar in Brahmaloka as Lord Brahma. So, but he heard the debate between the great scriptures, and well, initially, of course, somehow his interest in impersonalism became aroused, or some interest was implanted in his heart about impersonalism. So then he heard the debate, and he became basically convinced that if you want to become liberated, devotional service is the best way to achieve that. And then the greatest of the great scriptures preached to him that actually devotional service is an end in itself. It is not just a matter of it being the best way to achieve liberation, but it is the supreme goal, it is the supreme activity, the supreme means for advancement, and the supreme end, the supreme goal, to just become advanced in devotional service, and to become a pure devotee and lover of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, Gopikumar, he became basically convinced, but still he had some desire, some interest at least, in understanding what is this liberation really. That was there. So he was instructed right at the end, then maybe you should go to Mahakalapur and see for yourself and get a little direct experience about liberation. So then he left Brahmaloka, and now at the beginning of chapter 3, Gopikumar is back in Vrindavan. Now he finds that because he's been in Brahmaloka for some time, he's been Lord Brahma for some time, so when he comes back to Earth, he finds Earth has changed due to the passage of time. He has not changed. He remains exactly the same cowherd boy, Gopikumar, young cowherd boy. He has not changed. But in general, the planet Earth has changed because a lot of time has passed. He's been there, well, for many days of Brahma, as Lord Brahma. So things have changed, but he comes back to Earth, he sees that, but then he goes to Vrindavan, and he finds that Sri Vrindavan Dham has not changed. He must have very transcendental vision. I mean, at least some transcendental vision. Even though he's not perfect, he's not reached the goal, at least, that he is moving towards and being moved towards, in fact, by his guru and by the Lord. But still he's fairly advanced, so he sees Vrindavan Dham as having not changed. I guess he didn't see all the houses which are coming up around Vrindavan town, and the new cars and the billboards and whatnot, the factories out on the main road. I guess he didn't notice them. That's why I'm assuming he has somewhat transcendental vision, because on a certain level, Vrindavan Dham is reflecting the change which is going on in the external world. Pretty much as much, at least, you know, to some extent, considerable extent. But Gopikumar, his consciousness and his perception of things was such, he didn't see any change. He saw no change, in fact, in Vrindavan. So the Lord had encouraged him, go to Vrindavan and move around, visit the places and like that. So he did that. And the Lord told him that you will meet your guru again. And sure enough, he meets his spiritual master for the third time. And as in all the other meetings, his spiritual master is completely absorbed, totally overwhelmed by symptoms of love of God, and in fact he is just lying unconscious in a devotional trance, and very esoteric and extremely elevated state of pure love of God. So Gopikumar, finding his spiritual master in this very glorious transcendental condition, he tries to revive him by different means, sprinkling water on him and picking him up and speaking to him, and eventually through sprinkling him with water and various other means, he brings his spiritual master back to external consciousness. So,